Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to welcome everyone who's here for this week, with Dr. T, our weekly news show. This week is an important week with our monthly guest, Twyla Braze. Twyla has been with us for over a year coming at once a month and talking about really important current events. She is the co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, a patient-centered, privacy-focused policy organization established more than 25 years ago in Minnesota. She has great efforts with something called the Wedge and the Patient Toolbox, and a really great updated tool for people with Medicare. And she can talk about that a little bit. But I don't want to waste too much of her time because she's got doing her introduction, because she's been with us here every month and we've got really important things to talk about tonight. So Twyla, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
The whole thing with the first thing on your list that you sent me was about the Trump administration's termination of all these committees and all these people through USAID. Do you think that there's a lot of people revolting about that? I think it's a great idea, I suppose, because I'm not the one losing my job. But what do you have to say about all of that?
Well, I think it's just wonderful. You know, I know that there's so much money being wasted and there's so many people hours being wasted. And, you know, the federal government doesn't make any of us money. If they would all go out and be productive somewhere else in the world, that would be great. Maybe they could create things, or, you know, they could be part of the shortages of staff that, you know, all of these businesses are experiencing. They're all looking for staff, right? And so I think it's great when I just see that they are cutting millions and billions and hopefully trillions of dollars, you know, from spending for programs that we don't need, for people we don't need to deliver those programs. I just think it's fantastic. You know, I think it's just like a new day every morning, every time I hear that something is being found, something is being cut, and somebody's being terminated.
I totally agree with you. I mean, when you look at all the things that DOGE has uncovered, the millions and millions and billions of dollars now of just nonsensical waste. I remember I don't know if you watched, it was a few weeks ago when Trump had his I don't know what, it wasn't really a State of a Union address, but it was like a State of a Union address when he addressed Congress, and he was reading off the list of things, and he's like, and we donated, or we gave $20 million to sedentary immigrants. He said, nobody even knows what that is. And we just gave all that money to those people. I agree with you. I just think it's just despicable. I think that the talking about it publicly has kind of died down a little bit, and I wish it would pick back up. I totally agree with you on that. Totally. You know, we talked about, and I've talked about, I just did a little video on the hearings that we were listening to for HHS, NIH, CDC, and CMS. And I listened to most of those. I listened to almost all of them. And I hope that most people did. If you didn't and you want to listen to, I think you should go and listen to at least 10 or 15 minutes of these hearings. You can find them all on YouTube. You can go and rewatch them. They've all been recorded on YouTube. And then I watched the one with Dr. Oz. And you and I have talked about that a little bit. And I was kind of, you know, listening to him talk about, it seemed as though some things he seemed to be very well versed on. And I don't know if they are well studied for these things, if they get like notes that they have to study. But other things he just seemed like he didn't have a clue about. And so it was really just kind of disturbing to watch that, knowing that we have talked about, you know, I read your letter that you sent about withdrawing his nomination. What do you think? Do you think I think he's going to get approved. What do you think?
Yes, I'm almost positively sure he's going to get approved. And, you know, for him, when you watched him in that hearing, what you saw was somebody that was very lighthearted. You know, he was laughing at this and laughing at that. And it was all just, you know, fun. You know, the things that they said and the way that he responded to them, it was like he was having fun. Not, I wasn't having fun, but it was like he was having fun. And, you know, my great concern is he's such an industry guy. You know, he says that he's going to divest himself from the hospitals he's invested in and the healthcare industry he's invested in, the pharma he's invested in, and there's something else that he's invested in too. But he's a very big Medicare Advantage guy. He wrote in, let me see, I think it was in June 2020, when we were all just getting out of lockdown, right? He wrote with the CEO of a the former CEO of a health plan, a really major CEO, and they wrote an article called "Medicare Advantage for All is the Answer to Healthcare in America." And so, from his perspective, the idea of having a national healthcare system for all was what they were talking about there. And the suggestion was a 20% payroll tax to pay for this thing. So, I was not able to listen to the entire hearing, and I should go back and listen and see if anybody asked him that question about what about this article and about what about Medicare Advantage for all and the 20% tax. Did anybody ask that question? Because I there were people around the table who should have gotten our letter about our concern with this person being in charge of CMS, who really wants a national healthcare system, claims to be a Republican, part of a Republican administration. Well, this is not Republican at all. And so it's very concerning to me that he would get in that position, particularly if he has anybody counseling him in that direction, and if he puts all his oomph into making that happen, like the health plans would probably like that to happen as long as they're running the show. And Medicare Advantage for All would put them in charge of the national healthcare system.
I don't remember if that question was specifically asked. The one thing that did catch my eye, and somebody clipped it out and made a YouTube post about it, not YouTube, I'm sorry, Instagram post about it, was kind of towards the end of his interview. He was talking about changes, and they were talking about all the changes that need to be made. And he said there are a lot of changes that need to be made inside of Medicare and Medicaid. And when you talk to any doctor, any hospital person, any human being that is involved in healthcare at all, the biggest complaint is about Medicaid. And there's a lot of changes that need to be made. He said, but the bottom line is there's about 150 people in this country, 150 people who are in charge of every aspect of healthcare. And none of them want any change. And the senator, it was like you could have heard a pin drop, when that was happening. And then they quickly interceded and changed the topic into something else. But that's really where we are, not only with CMS, but with NIH, with FDA, with USDA. I mean, I've had a lot of conversations recently with people that are very concerned about the PICs that are ending up at USDA. And of some of the organic farming industry and things like that. So it's like every element, we have been so infested with big everything, big tech, big pharma, big food, big everything, that even nominal changes are going to be very challenging, I believe.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when sort of the dust settles. And I don't think we're at the dust settling yet. And I don't know if your listeners know about a woman. Her name is Janica. I think that's her first name. Anyway, she goes by Data Republican on X. And Elon Musk found her, told everybody about her, and now she's got more than 600,000 followers on X. But she got doxxed, and then her whole family had to move from Utah to Florida. But
Wow.
she is the one who Elon found and tasked with doing a variety of things, including she went in there because she's a data analyst and just as smart as a whip. She's deaf and nonverbal.
Oh.
So, but she knows numbers and she's smart. And so she created an index. I thought it was really interesting. What she said is data is not transparency. In other words, you could have all this data, but it doesn't mean anything, right? But she made it transparent by indexing every grant that was being paid for by the federal government. And
Wow.
so putting it in a book. So she
Oh.
created a book with every grant indexed. And so now it's all very accessible. And so she has brought transparency to it. And I think Doge has her tasked with now connecting all the people. So out of her is coming the fact that there's all of these NGOs, and these NGOs have members of Congress on them. And then these members of Congress vote to give money to these nonprofit entities, who just happen to be the nonprofit entities on which they are part of the board. And then
Wow.
they get money as a result of the NGO gets it, but so do they as a board member.
Is that book out yet?
No. She's connecting all the dots. No, she's just, it's for the federal government, for DOE. She's connecting all the dots. So if you go to at Data Republican on X, you can see everything that she's doing. She'll talk about it. But also, if you go to Doge, everything that she finds and the other technical people, young people that Elon is bringing in, it's all being reported on X. It's just one after another. You can see all where the money is. And then there's the Doge website where it has all of their discoveries, in much bigger, Twitter or X is a smaller space, right? But Doge, the website, has everything that they're finding.
You know, I really hope that the next step is this exposure, because she's right. I mean, you know, because you say we gave $20 million or $50 million or $5 billion here, but that doesn't really mean anything unless you know whose pocket that money went into. I had a meeting with my attorney yesterday about a couple of different things, or not yesterday, on Friday. And we were talking about this, and I said, you know, they're not probably going to be able to track every single dollar, because some of it just is maybe cash. Maybe, you know, cash isn't really traceable. But I said, if I write you a check, you've got to sign your signature on the back to cash it. If I wire you money, my name and your name is on that wire. I mean, the traceability in the banking system is 100% there. I mean, you know, they've known where you send money and how you spend money and all this other stuff for a long time. So I'm hoping that the next step is really exposing whose pockets this money actually ended up in. And I think it's going to be very, very, very disruptive to our entire government.
Well, I look at the possibility that all sorts of NGOs just disappear, because no money is going to go to them. Like, I just don't think that they should have any government money. Like, our organization, we're simply, people who donate to us as individuals, if they've got private grants or trust, but there's not a government dime that we receive. And we wouldn't want to, because we wouldn't want them to have any control over us. But for the most part, those NGOs that are getting government money are doing the government's bidding, and are perfectly happy to do the government's bidding, whereas our organization would not be happy to do the government's bidding. So I think that so many of the NGOs, if not all of them, should go away. Like why? I heard somewhere that of the federal workers, that 30% are contractors. What are we doing with contractors? It's like, get rid of the contractors, get rid of the NGOs. And I know that some division or some agency or whatever went down to its, what was it called? The statutory minimum of one person. So they fired everybody and they left one person there, because the entity is in law, right? So they left one person staffing this thing.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, if I had 15, if There were if I had 1500 employees and somebody came and did an analysis and found out that 1499 were not important, what was happening to my payroll all those years? Which is, you know, kind of what I think is what's happening, what DOES is uncovering. You know, another thing that you mentioned briefly, the things that are in the news about hospital systems, as you were talking about Medicare Advantage, is that that 80 hospitals, 80 hospitals over the last 4 years have stopped delivering babies because of financial losses. Talk about that a little bit. That's disturbing.
Most of your listeners, and actually most Americans, they're not watching the news that we watch, that our organization watches, right? So they have no idea what's happening across the country with hospitals. They probably don't realize that health plans are buying hospitals. Hospitals are buying health plans. A lot of smaller hospitals cannot survive because of the government mandating the electronic health record. And so they're being gobbled up by bigger hospitals and shut. And then what we see are these kind of news flashes where over the past 4 years, 80 hospitals have stopped delivering babies, and mostly because of financial losses. So hospitals, some hospitals are in real dire condition. Other hospitals are making hand over fistful of money because they've gotten themselves into a kind of a monopoly position. They've got all the doctors under them. They've signed, accountable care organizations, which is an Obamacare thing where they agree to, it's like a kickback from the government. If they save the government money, they'll get money from the government. So if they don't give as much care, they'll get money from the government, that sort of thing. And so, and a lot of hospitals, some of them are nonprofit, which means that they're tax exempt, and other ones are for profit. But your listeners are probably not looking at the situation of hospitals. And I think, what's good to know is how many, there's just been so many closures of hospitals across the country, particularly rural areas. So if you have an emergency, what is going to happen to you if your nearest hospital is 2 hours away or 3 hours away or even further? And they're shutting emergency rooms because of the illegal immigrants who are coming in. And because there's a federal law that says you have to at least stabilize this person in the ER and then decide what to do with them. And so some of them are just shutting their emergency rooms because they can't deal with the fact that all these people are coming in who aren't going to pay them a dime, and there's no money going to come from anywhere. So it's better to just shut the emergency room rather than lose all the money from having the emergency room open. And this is all happening because we have got all of these third parties in this entire healthcare system, all with their own agendas, all the mergers and acquisitions, all the vertical integration. And by that, I mean the health plans owns the hospital, which owns the clinics, which control the doctors. That's vertically integrated. That was all part of the Affordable Care Act, was to vertically integrate the entire healthcare system. And of course, that's what a socialized medicine system is like in Canada. It's all vertically integrated. It's all under the government. Boom, 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 all the way down. And so for this reason, the hospitals, there's just a lot of hospitals that are not going to survive, even if you might need them. They are not going to be around because this system that's happening here is not about you, the patient. It's not about being available to you. It's not about having easy and quick access. It is about having, being the biggest player, the biggest payer, the one that gets the most kickbacks, whatever you want to say. I have often said the mission of medicine has been taken over by the business of healthcare. And that's part of what you're seeing here. All of these hospitals who aren't delivering babies, nobody's thinking really about the mom, when they allow this kind of collapse to take place. But a lot of it comes from the government and from collaboration with the health plans and the healthcare systems, the two of them working together for their own benefit, not for the patient or the doctor.
Wow, that was one of the things that one of the senators had said in the hearing with Dr. Oz for CMS was that they were making a real the Democratic side was making a really, really big deal about don't you dare touch Medicaid. Don't you do anything to cut back any of those dollars. And he's like, well, that's what doctors complain about the most because people may not realize this. I mean, back in the day when I was in the ER, there was a woman that I'll never forget this. This was 30 years ago, and I've never forgotten this story, that she came in and she was on Medicaid because she'd gotten divorced, then she got sick, and she was by herself, and she was really back in the day, like I said, 30 years ago, was one of these people that used Medicaid appropriately, that this was going to be a safety net for her till she could get back on her feet. And she felt, and she said, well, I've got my Medicaid card. I mean, that's going to cover this and going to pay for this, isn't it? And I'm like, it covers about 10%, and the hospital eats the rest. And she was mortified because people think that their Medicaid card is just like a credit card that you just go into the ER, into the doctor's office, and they swipe your card. And if the bill is $150, they swipe your card and the practitioner gets paid or the hospital gets paid $150. But they swipe your card and you may, if you're lucky, and you have to fight for maybe $20 is what you kind of get. And so it's and they were saying, and one of the things, the reason I said that was she made a statement, and I have no way of connect of correct of finding out if this was true, but she said 47% of children are on Medicaid.
Who said that?
One of the Democratic senators.
Oh, I see.
And I'm like, I, that seems outrageous to me. And that seems like that may be one of those fraud things that we need to look into, because
Well,
the number just seemed outrageously high to me.
under the Affordable Care Act now, there is Medicaid comes through the exchanges. And so if you don't qualify, and I think there is something about this with children for like the first 2 years of a child's life, if I'm correct, they can be separate from the parents in Medicaid. And the parents might pick some Obamacare program or not be eligible for Medicaid, but the child might be considered it. I feel like I might be inaccurate about this because I haven't thought about it for a long time, but I do remember there was this parsing. The parsing was not only for the child, but for the child and the mother for a limited period of time. And I don't know if the mother was a shorter period or the mother and the child were the same, but there is something like that where they have Medicaid cover if you're within a certain eligibility, limit. And so a lot of people could be put in Medicaid because they had no other choice. They may have wanted to pay, but they were automatically enrolled in Medicaid because of how the system worked.
There's so many automatically awful things inside of our government and healthcare, isn't there? I mean,
Yep.
like Medicare and Social Security tied together, which shouldn't be. Talking about this vertical integration, one of the things you mentioned was about this law in South Dakota about parents in the exam room. I mean, that's sort of a vertical thing that you talked about, that they passed the House and now it's going to the Senate. Is that a good bill? Is that something you want to do? Or
Yeah,
they
so let me just talk about it. So in the space of about 3 weeks, I heard from five different parents and I thought, I guess I maybe should do something about this. But the fact of the matter is the parents were complaining about the fact that when they took their older minor child, so let's just say 11 and up, into the exam room, certain new things were happening. They were being told things like, well, once your child hits this age, you will no longer be able to look at their medical record. Or once your child hits this age, you will no longer be able to stay in the exam room. And I was hearing stories from parents who were being told to leave the exam room, and forced to leave the exam room and leave their minor child alone with this, this healthcare authority who is then going to ask them a bunch of sensitive personal questions, and they would be in there on their own. Sort of like if you were with the police and they said you can't have your attorney to protect you against what you're going to say. The child has, that's a very vulnerable time for the child because that is not an equal relationship. This is a powerful person, the doctor, the nurse, whomever it is. And then there's this child who's somewhere between 11 and 17, being asked these very personal questions. And they, for them to know that they can just say no, or to realize that everything that they say is going to be entered into their medical record and could live with them for the rest of their life, this is why this shouldn't happen. So what this bill in North Dakota is talking about is saying that the parents, one, cannot be deprived of access to the medical record, two, cannot be forced out of the exam room, and three, they can, the clinic can say the topics, need to say the topics of what the child is going to be asked. So the parent can decide whether they want to be in the exam room or not, but they'll know what the topics about which the child is going to be asked. So this has passed the House, the North Dakota House, and it is being heard in the North Dakota Senate in a committee. And then, no matter what, even if that committee sends it, we understand it might be an equal 3-3 vote in that Senate committee. Even though that might be true, it will go to the floor, and it will get a vote. And so, we really hope and pray that this bill could actually get signed by the governor. This is a bill that we wrote, and a legislator who is very interested in our idea, and then in combination we wrote this with her. And so we want this to happen, and then we want this to happen in more states around the country because children have to be protected. They're talking like, well, there's abuse. This is the only way we can find abuse. Well, the real abuse here is the fact that you're going to exploit this child. and the parent's not going to be there to protect them. And nobody loves the child like the parent. And yeah, of course, there's going to be some abuse cases, but most of them are not. And if there's some reason where you really think that there's abuse, this bill says that you can, I can't remember if you can get an order or you can make an exception, but you have to write it in the medical record that this is why, because you actually suspected real abuse was happening.
Do you, are there other bills like this being considered around the country that you know of, or is this a first?
No, this is a first.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because this is all about the Healthy People 2030 push forward to include the psychosocial aspects and as terms of health. And they ask questions like, are you safe? Do you have guns in your house? Do your parents fight? How much alcohol is in the house? And all of
Right.
these really nosy questions that are all part of Healthy People 2030. So good for you for writing this bill and standing up for that. That's important. So that's a bit of good news. Another bit of good news is all these 10 states that are talking about making ivermectin over the counter. Now, talk
Yeah.
about that a little bit. That's
Really
another.
fantastic. And I think Minnesota is the last one. So this is where I'm located, is in Minnesota, and we have a legislator, actually, I think it might be on both sides, legislators who are moving that bill forward. I don't know what'll happen, but the fact of the matter is that we've got all these states moving this forward, and this is where it has to be. You know, your listeners may or may not know this, but Tylenol is way more dangerous than ivermectin. So if you decide that you are going to use Tylenol as your drug of choice to commit suicide, you will not die right away. But you will not have any choice but to die, because it will kill your liver. And so it is a perfect, if you're guaranteed you want to commit suicide, pick Tylenol. But where is Tylenol? It is all over the drug shelves. You know, does anybody tell people it's that dangerous? No. But ivermectin, on the other hand, I think I may have told you and your audience once before about the case of the Cameroonian teenager, 19-year-old, who decided to use ivermectin to kill herself, right? So she took, 400 pills from the bottle. And when they found her, she had all sorts of symptoms. She wasn't dying. She had all sorts of symptoms. And so they took her to the hospital, plugged her into an IV, and waited for 5 days until the symptoms resolved, and then sent her home. And she's now at the university studying for, something, right? That
Hopefully,
would not take place. That would not happen with Tylenol.
he's studying to be a pharmacologist. Talking about other things in the news, what do you think of this measles hysteria? Oh my gosh. And now that they're denying that the federal court in New York is denying Amish people the right to refuse on religious grounds. I mean, when is this nonsense going to stop? It is just unbelievably a bunch of nonsense. And I'm hoping that people who listen to this now and in the future, and people who have listened to a lot of the things that I've written and put out about, measles is a fever, a cough, a rash, and some maybe some diarrhea, and maybe some skin peeling when their fever is gone, and then they are left behind with a lifetime of immunity. It's what about the rights of these Amish children in New York? What's going to happen with that?
Well, I mean, we are in a battle here. That's really all you can say, is it's the socialists, it's the Marxists, it's the globalists who all want to control. And COVID really set a whole bunch of new people up against those folks. Open their eyes, let them be seen, and then so we've got really a battle going on of the informed and those who really believe in their rights as citizens of this country, but not only as citizens, but also as patients and as humans, to not be injected and to make choices about injections. So we still have that, whole bureaucratic push, and even the judicial push for those judges that are globalists and socialists and all of those, right? And so we're going to have this battle. I expect that this will go higher, all the way to the Supreme Court, most likely. And I know that if I, well, I don't know. I'm just sitting here going, what have they decided about religious convictions as the Supreme Court currently standing? Certainly on the gay issue and, What's his name? Jack, what's his name with the cake, and the people who want him to make a cake, and that was a religious freedom issue. I think this is a religious freedom issue as well. I think it'll get to the Supreme Court and the Amish will win. But it just shows you that those folks who want to control us, control our bodies, inject us with whatever they want to inject us with and call it good, that those people are unrelenting. They still believe that they should have the power to do this. They are, of course, wrong. It is completely unconstitutional. They don't even belong being judges, right? But here you are. And so thankfully, Trump put a lot more conservative judges in when he was there. Biden's put in a lot others, right? So it's a battle. We will just, and eventually, people will make other decisions like, sorry, I'm leaving the state of New York, or I'm leaving the public schools, and we will teach our own children because we love our children. We're not going to let you have our children. And they will make other independent decisions. And hopefully, we'll keep enough freedom in this country and take it back. We have to take it back, right? It's not just keeping it because we're losing it by the minute, right? And Trump is helping to us to get it back. Although some of his people, we got some questions about, but other than that, in Germany, if you homeschooled, you're basically put in prison and the children are taken. It's required, right? So there's was that German family that escaped to the United States, tried to stay here and secure asylum, and that was not allowed. And so they had to go back to Germany, and I wonder what they're doing. But we, this is when push comes to shove. And hopefully we don't get to the point of, bleeding and that kind of battle.
Well, I hope that I hope if this does go to the Supreme Court, that maybe this will push the conservative court to reevaluate Jacobson versus Massachusetts.
Yes.
You know, the
Yes.
1904 law that says that you have to vaccinate in order to for the public good, and that was about smallpox. And because they refused to vaccinate, they had a small fine for not vaccinating. They didn't get ostracized and all these things. And I've read a lot about the interpretation of Jacobson versus Massachusetts and how it has been misused and abused and misinterpreted. And this may be a good thing to go back and force this without having to re-adjudicate it and that cost millions of dollars and all these different things at the court. But this is a human rights case that is an active right now that
Right.
may force the court to go back, and hopefully that the attorneys for the Amish will use that in terms of that is a time for now is the time to 20, 120 years later to reevaluate that law that has again supported the pharmaceutical industry all this additional time. You know, one thing that I forgot to ask about when we were talking about the watching these hearings was the Trump administration pulling the rug out underneath the nomination of Dr. Dave Weldon, who was the perfect person for the job. But he was perfect because for us, because he knows where all the dead bodies lie. He was part of those autism hearings that Burton held back in the early 2000s. He pushed the vaccine safety data link into the public eye, tried to make it so that other independent researchers could investigate it. But we really haven't seen another nominee come forward. And I don't know if it's still possible that Trump is going to get him in that position. What do you think?
I don't know. Once somebody has been asked by the administration to withdraw or been withdrawn by the administration, however that process works, I don't know whether Trump would go back and do it. There are certainly other physicians. I know that Latipo, the Surgeon General of Florida, has been floated, at least in the news, or at least in circles that I listen to, that his name might be up there. It's a possibility like Scott Atlas, who was
He'd be
his
wonderful too.
COVID advisor.
He'd be
Why
good.
not pick him, right? So there are some good people that could be chosen. I just hope that they will be chosen so we don't get wishy-washy people in there who will make really bad decisions and not deal with the bureaucrats who want to keep things, the way it is and make sure that all of Fauci's influence and all of that is gone from the CDC and their kind of decisions that they made.
I found it interesting that this was the first year. They passed this rule 2 years ago that said this was the first year, and starting in 2024, there would be Senate confirmation hearings for cabinet members. And how did they know to decide to do that this year? Or is that just was that just a random draw on this year? You know, most of those things don't happen randomly. But that they haven't, because they haven't had to do Senate confirmations of all of these cabinet and sub-cabinet levels in the past, have they?
Haven't they done it with cabinet members? I wasn't sure about the sub-cabinet members,
Okay.
but I thought that they had done it with the cabinet members. But maybe I'm wrong. I was just trying to think of, people like Kathleen Sebelius. I feel like she had a hearing before the Senate.
Maybe
That
so.
was under
Somebody had
Obama.
posted that in the Sovereignty Coalition group that this was the first year that there were these hearings, and so I don't know, but it's they're pretty awful, and I'm really encouraging all the listeners to go back and listen to. I mean, they drone. If you're not really into this topic, they drone on for the each one of those hearings are about 2 hours each. They go on and on and on and on, and it's a bunch of kabuki theater giving these senators an opportunity to look like they're very important and they're really doing important things and they're experts on something they know nothing about. And so what these hearings are. So I really am encouraging the listeners, go back and listen to at least some of it. You know, pull up some ones that you have some interest in, whether it's USDA or, whatever, and go to YouTube and listen to just a few minutes of it because it's a really important thing to do. Because that brings us to the last, we just got a few minutes left, but I wanted to cover some of these things you talked about on Medicare and DOGE and some of the things that they're finding out, about payments to Peru and plant watering contracts. And I remember hearing that there was a guy that they found in Louisiana who had 31 Social Security numbers and 31 addresses and was collecting $1.1 million a year from Social Security for all this different fraud. How do you think we're ever going to, I mean, is just the lack of payment going to stop the fraud, or what are we going to do so this just doesn't start again?
Well, I know that one thing that Elon has talked about is the fact that there's so many checks going out of the Treasury, which do not say who, why, what is the purpose of the check? It's got a two, but it doesn't have a purpose. It doesn't have a code. It doesn't have anything that explains why this money is going to this person or to this organization. Nothing. Right. And so that is clearly one of the things. And as I understand it, the computer systems are ancient and they are going to try to upgrade them, which will make it better for tracking and for compliance and for auditing and for all sorts of things that the other side doesn't ever want to have happen. But now that, even Democrats who maybe even voted for Harris, are listening to this and they can't believe. They can't believe what their money is being used for and who it's being sent to, and all of these ridiculous things that millions and billions of dollars are going toward. And so, I think it has caused something across the country that will be long lasting. People will not forget this atrocious spending of their money, this incompetence, it's not even just incompetence, right? It's purposefully spending for things that aren't even a benefit to the country to further other agendas, like all of the LGBT and all the DEI and all the trans this and trans that in other countries, trying to build up these initiatives in those countries. It's really trying to globally build this agenda using our tax dollars. And so I don't think the people are ever going to forget this. And I think it has really caused a significant distrust in the government. But it does require ongoing efforts, even after DOGE, right? To stop this, to stop allowing this. And this is part of, you talked about those hearings. And I told you before we actually got on here that you see, you listen to them all complain, and they beg the nominee to do this and not do that, and say that you'll guarantee that you'll always do this and you'll always bring it to us. And you know what they have done is simply showed their own impotence. It shows how they have given away their legislative authority to these agencies, and the agencies just take the money and run and put it into their own agendas. And so this is where the RAINS Act by Senator Lee, where it requires Congress to actually vote on every regulation before it would ever go into effect, putting Congress as the one who's responsible for everything that happens in the agencies. This is why that's a really important act and why it should take place, because otherwise you get another administration in and you got people who don't really care, and this will just build itself all back up.
Well, I can see the plus minuses of that. I mean, the good side is that, Congress is supposed to represent we the people, and to do those things. There would be so many things that would come across their plate that the backlog of that would be, unbelievable, be from here to Mars and back, be the backlog. The second thing is they don't represent we the people anymore. That's the problem. I mean, we could see that with when Trump had his State of a Union address equivalent, when you could see the Democrats just sitting there holding up their little signs in protest, and they couldn't even celebrate the kid with cancer that became part of of the Secret Service, that he leaped into his arms and just hugged him. It just brought tears to my eyes. They couldn't even even give a modicum of fake applause to stuff like that. These people do not represent us anymore. And I think that it's time for American people to really understand that and take back our republic as best as they can. Twyla, we've got just a few minutes left in our show here today, and we've covered a lot of ground, which we always do. What would you like to leave our listeners with here today?
Well, I guess some active engagement items. And so I would still like people who have not responded to our Real ID requests for action to take action, to go to refuserealid.org and contact your members of the US Senate, the US House, and the President. Very easy, just click and send. It's already pre-written for you. And so that is at refuserealid.org. And of course, if you have a real ID, a car with a star on it, to get rid of it and go to your DMV and get a standard driver's license. And then also, if you or anybody that you know is on Medicare, going on Medicare, thinking about Medicare, get our Medicare how-to guide. We had a really top-line federal official who told me that this is a real service to people. It has things in that they won't be able to find elsewhere. We have the 10 Medicare traps, trying to tell people how to avoid getting caught in these Medicare traps. And then I will say that we are also working on a how to switch, out of Real ID, and that will be shortly on our Refuse Real ID page. And we're also coming up with a new document, not a new document, but just a handout to help you figure out whether or not you have an independent doctor. So if you sign up at our website, cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org, you will know when these are available and how to get to them, because these are tools that everybody needs to know. We also have a helpful handout spot on our website at the near the bottom. It's called Helpful Handouts, and there's a bunch of handouts, like even what to do when you're in the exam room to protect yourself against HIPAA, protect yourself against questionnaires, and all of those things. So I just encourage people to really engage, because protecting freedom is up to you. It's not up to President Trump. It's not up to your members of Congress, even though they're supposed to. Ultimately, you have to hold them accountable, but you also have to protect yourself while they are not protecting you. So this is part of what we as an organization do. Not only do we deal with policy, but we provide you practical tools to protect yourself.
That's wonderful. And those tools are so important. And I'll throw up throw out another tool that people may want to put in their toolbox. It's to have a patient advocate. Like if you have a problem, you know, with one of your doctors, you have trouble with navigating vaccine exemptions or issues with your insurance. If you go to graithcare.com, Graith, which is a combination of Grace and Faith, which is Priscilla's daughter's names, that is how she named her company. So it's Graithcare, Graith. Care, graithcare.com, and you can sign up for one of their advocacy programs, and they do this all over the world. And I'm also now a member with Graith Care, that I'm actually offering consultations on vaccine consults. If people want to talk to me about that, they can go to graithcare.com and they can sign up to get a consultation with me. So with that, Twyla, it's always, you know, you and I could talk for hours. There's so much in the news, and there's such a wealth of information of the things that we can talk about. But our time has come to close for today, and I want to thank all of our wonderful listeners who are listening live here today, or are listening in the future, because our podcasts now stay out there. They're all forward facing. They're listed every day at 11 a.m. We post something 11 days every 11 a.m. every day. We also post on a short little clip on our Substack every day at drtenpenny.substack.com. And if you're not a Prime member yet, please go to shoptenpenny.net and join. It's your support of what we do that really keeps us going and keeps us moving forward. Go to cchfreedom.org and donate to Twyla's organization too, because that's what keeps them going. You know, we don't have money out of Doge, either one of us, that Doge is going to find, that the government has been funding us with. So we need your support. We need your prayers. We need your dollars, and every dollar counts. So with that, I want to thank everyone so much for joining us here today. And I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, lean into God, trust Him for everything. He won't let you down. Mark your calendars. We'll see you here next week, same time, at This Week with Dr. T. We've got podcasts for you every day this week. We'll see you Wednesday on Morning Coffee with Dr. T. And Twyla, we'll see you next month. So thank you so much for being here, everybody. And to everybody else, goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out: Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.